and welcome back to the latest episode of Innovate Her, the podcast where I interview women trailblazing the way in the product sphere. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Katya Denike, Chief Product Officer at Holland & Barrett. Katya is a passionate and empathetic product leader making significant strides in the health and wellness retail industry. Katya leads a cross-functional team of product managers, designers, and researchers across a diverse portfolio of products at one of the largest health and wellness retailers in Europe. She is on a mission to humanize work, ensuring that technology serves to enhance the human experience. As a big fan of tech and numbers, Katya has adopted AI and ML at scale in her products long before it ever became mainstream. So let's tune into her insights and journey in the product world. Katya, how are you today?
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rebecca. I'm delightful and honored to be here.
Amazing. Could you just tell us a little more about your role as a Chief Product Officer?
Yes, sure. So as a Chief Product Officer at Holland & Barrett, I'm taking care of the diverse team across the whole portfolio of digital products at H&B. That includes our digital website and the app. It includes our retail support products. We have our own development software for the retail, things like our deals and things like efficiency products for our colleagues, as well as one of the innovative products called Cerebro, where we help our colleagues to consult and advise our customers in the best way. It's also products across the what we call firm foundation area, namely commercial products such as PIM, master data, promo, and price management tools, as well as supply chain products. So lots and lots of things. As you mentioned, the team is, it's a cross-functional team that includes product managers, designers, TPMs, and UXR function. So yeah, that's the role in a nutshell. I've been in this role for the last 3 years. Prior to that, I was director of product engineering, and prior to that, I've done some other exciting stuff we'll probably talk about later.
You've worn many hats. could you share with us a little bit about your journey on how you got into the product world?
Yes, of course. This pleasure. I've been lucky to enter the product management just when the field appeared, and also very, very close to the beginning of my career. So starting from a very beginning, way back, I was born in a small place called Belgorod, just on the country border between Russia and Ukraine, in case you're wondering where my accent is coming from. For some reason, from a very, very early years, I knew that I need to go somewhere, like that I need to do some travel and do something big with my life. So at the age of 14, I moved to Moscow to study math. And effectively, it's like a bit of a social lift in Eastern European environment. You have to study precise science to kind of move to other places and get more opportunities. So this is what I did. I graduated with math major at university, and in my last university years, I started to work in various roles because I needed a source of income. And I started to do small things as in being math teacher and tutor and things here and there. And then I've been lucky to enter an assistant internship role at McKinsey & Company, purely by chance. But I think it was a great start of the corporate career for me because it established a very high standards from the very beginning of how I want to operate, which I think influences me till this day. And then at some point, I was still living at my dormitory at the university. So I was still being multitasking between being student and doing some work. And I've seen this big advertisement from the big company called Yandex. It's the largest tech company in Eastern Europe, that they are opening a school and an intern program for the product managers. Now, I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know who product managers are. No one knew at this point, but I just read the description of who are they looking for, and I was like, oh my God, it sounds exactly like me. It sounds like exactly what I would enjoy. So I went there, I passed the interview, I got the internship and then a job, and I just never looked back, stayed in the product for the 10 years now almost.
Oh, there you go. That was a small moment that led to a big change in your life.
Yeah, I think these things happen a lot.
What unique perspectives or experiences do you believe women bring to product in terms of roles and innovation in the industry?
That's such a great question. I do tend to think, like, you know, about it in a slightly more general way, because I think it's mostly about like qualities that are considered to be feminine qualities, but sometimes it can be male who displays those qualities as well. So I'll try to answer to this in a more generic way, if that's okay. And I think one of the things that is considered to be this, that women bring to the table more often, it's this opportunity to create a safe space and the environment where people listen to each other, as well as opportunity to bring empathy to the table, which is, I think, so opportunity to create a safe space is majorly important for innovation, right? I don't have to talk a lot about this. I think it's pretty much not controversial, like this ability to express lots of ideas and kind of bounce ideas of each other. And empathy by itself, I think it's kind of a make it or break it factor, especially in the transformation context. Wherever you're working in transformation, where you have to turn the big business around to make it effectively operating the digital product operating model, it matters a lot not only know what is the right thing to do, but also to deliver this thing in the right way with a great understanding of what are the emotions of everyone who is participating in this process. And there is lots and lots of emotions are in place, because change is hard for people, and they might be operating in one way for like 10, 20, 30 years, and suddenly they have to do something different. And I've seen successful transformations in the past, and I've seen unsuccessful transformation attempts. I think one of the big factors is that people are going kind of without this empathy and understanding, and they just trying to kind of headstrong push for whatever might be the right thing to do, but they meet lots and lots of resistance, which could have been avoided if you apply those generally feminine qualities of like, hey, what is this person actually cares about? What is like, what do they feel in this moment? Connecting with those feelings and trying to find this common ground of how we will do that together. So I'd say those are probably the big themes.
Lovely qualities.
Yes, agree.
And what, in your opinion, are some of the biggest challenges faced by women in the product sphere, and how are those challenges being addressed?
Also an excellent question. So there are quite a few things. I'd say I probably name a couple that are closer to my heart. I think, and it's really hugely depends on the environment, because I think as an industry and as an environment, we actually moved forward so much through the recent 10 years probably, and where I've started and where we are now with the understanding of different operation styles. It's two completely different worlds, but I would say that it's still, some environments are still male dominated in terms of operational style. Not even necessarily in terms of percentage presence, but it's like, you know, when some places it's a way of a norm to operate in this tougher, louder manner. It's kind of the loudest in the room is being heard and being actioned. And this is, I think, that female generally struggle with most. And again, it depends, because sometimes you get the same qualities in men as well. But effectively, it's just this kind of the environment. This is not very friendly to a softer communication style. I think we still struggle with that. And that's something we should address through just embracing different styles and through kind of making sure that the environment is not prone very much to this bias. A second thing I would say, again, this is very close to my heart, it's the whole theme of the mat leave and the whole theme of the family management, because women are traditionally the primary caregivers and the family, wherever they have children or they not, they expected to do still the major amount of the kind of house-related things. And it's especially noticeable in the mat leave context, because I don't know whether you've seen it or not, a couple of months ago, there was this big Economist article which showed, there was a chart on like how salary distribution goes, or career growth goes, and there is female and male actually went, like judging by number of career years, two lines were very, very similar, very close to each other. And when there was a point of like the birth of the first child, where the two lines just separated, mm-hmm. and then they never ever returned to the same level, which I found like it's kind of, I'm sorry to say, on the obvious side probably, but it is so heartbreaking. And I think it's something that we absolutely haven't nailed as a society yet, and something we need to work on.
Yeah, I find, so I'm Canadian, but I live in the UK now. And just even seeing the difference between Europe and Canada and how like we treat maternity leave is so drastically different. Like back home, it's very much, okay, you have your few months maternity, get back to work. Or in Europe, I think you even get paternity leave in some countries, which does not even exist in Canada. So just treating the whole family is so different depending on which countries you're even in.
No, I think you're spot on. And I think it's very encouraging to see, like, you know, paternity leave and things like this. As an example, so my baby is 18 months old and my husband was able to take actually the same paternity leave than I was able to take. So in this sense, we are very lucky being kind of an equal parents. But also, I don't think it's a situation across the UK, even though in the UK it might be, and in other European countries, it might be better. When, as you say, in Canada, it's definitely better than it is in Russia, as an example, like, where it's drastically different. So, yeah, some hope.
Some
hope to learn from the best and to progress further.
Yeah. Could you discuss a specific project or initiative that you've led in your career and that you're really proud of?
Well, I think, so starting probably from the immediate, an obvious thing, I am really, really proud about Holland Barrett Digital Transformation. I am the first CPO in the function. So we didn't have one before. We didn't have a product function, a separated one before that as well. And I've got this huge opportunity to build the team, to assess what we need as a business in terms of the digital products, to hire the right people in the team, and to make sure that we are impacting the business in the balanced way. Now, 3 years forward, our digital portfolio assets are probably unrecognizable from where we were. Like, we have now our own built up, which is like 6-7x of the digital share than it was 3 years ago. One of the best ratings on the App Store, things like that. Our website, winning the awards in the UK, lots of them, mostly like every year. Hopefully we will win some this year as well, like there is a few nominations are coming. And we built in the retail space where everything was paper-based at H&B just 3-4 years ago. Oh. We now have the fully, yeah, so we started pretty much like a base level, but we now have a fully digitized processes. We also did won an innovation award with the Cerebro product we built for our colleagues to help customers. So it's kind of, it's a huge journey, and it's not my own doing. I'm just a part of it, but being on the frontier of it, kind of leading the team who is effectively doing all those amazing things, it's a hugely inspiring for me, and every day is a learning and a journey. The other example when I can come up with, when I was more on the side of an individual contributor, and I thought it can be also a great example in the context of our conversation, is when I worked at Ozon, which is the largest e-com player in Eastern Europe. So it's kind of an Amazon of Eastern Europe. I've got an opportunity to lead the search and navigation function, which was like 50% of revenue went through this function. And I've got an opportunity to build the team and to introduce like machine learning, robust processes and robust advanced product, starting from the very, very basic level of product in the beginning where we didn't even have an A/B test. And the reason I wanted to talk about this example is, first, it was such an interesting challenge on many levels. It was a point in my career where I had an opportunity to devote my full self to work, working with my team daily and nightly. And within the year, we produced results, which was equivalent to like plus 15% of GMV of the company. So it was a hugely rewarding result. But second is the atmosphere at the zone was hugely in the style and in principle, like it was a male-dominated environment. And I remember like a cultural shock of coming there. I remember the first very, very tough conversations where I were like, you know, very uncomfortable, maybe even with the words used in the room. And I'm really proud that I was able to navigate this environment to find some close connections together with my team while staying true to myself. So I didn't revert it to the style. And yeah, it was a bit of work, but that absolutely stays the highlight.
Oh, it shows very strong character.
Oh, thank you so much.
What advice would you have for young women who are aspiring or want to enter into the product field?
Again, great question. When I'm trying to think about that, I'm thinking about what were the qualities that helped me to get where I am in my career. And I'm thinking about a few things there. One is, especially early in the career, I think it's very important to get your hands on as many things as you can. So effectively, I think what helped me a lot is I wasn't thinking too much wherever I'm getting paid for this or not, wherever like it's my job description, things like that. I was just trying to see the opportunity to improve things and kind of just jumping on this opportunity a lot. And that proved to be a good investment in terms of the career growth. Other thing, which I read somewhere, but I resonate with strongly, is about doing things before you're ready. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also very feminine quality of kind of trying to be risk averse, trying not to enter the field before you're absolutely comfortable with this style on average, men tend to be more assertive and more self-confident. So I think this opportunity to just believe in yourself and kind of try to do things even before you think you can do it. Like, failure is almost never as bad as it seems to be. And the size of the price, it's usually big in terms of how you're moving things forward. I think other thing connected to that is getting a mentor. It's hugely impactful. And also, if possible, trying to find yourself a boss who will be this person for you, who will be kind of pushing you towards your boundaries and helping you and supporting you, which I think I've been extremely lucky to have. And that's just, I think is a key important factor in the career. And it goes, I think it's very important sometimes to assess wherever you have a right leader, wherever you have a right environment around you, which allows you to grow, which will not hold you back, and being kind of, if you cannot answer this question positively, might be considering moving on. And finally, one last thing I wanted to say, it's about being yourself. Mm-hmm. So finding the environment in which you can be your authentic self. In a reasonable manner, right? And the one that is that fits, obviously, that is not harming the company. But I think it's so important in a way that sometimes we do spend lots and lots of energy to try to pretend to be someone else. But the world is large, and the amount of organizations there is large, and the amount of corporate cultures as well varies a lot. So if you feel like one corporate culture doesn't work for you, it requires lots of energy for you to adapt without even doing things, that again might be, it might be not the right thing.
It's like a journey of self-discovery as much as what a company can do for you and as what you can do for them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly this, because if you're the best self, you basically deliver the best things for the company.
Mm-hmm. How do you foster inclusivity and diversity into your product teams?
I think it's about, to me, it's about creating this environment which values the differences, which values different opinions and different communication styles, and that is trying to kind of actively encourage people sharing, creating this space for them to share. Some years ago, I've read the research about what makes the team the most productive team. If I'm not mistaken, it was Google HR team who ran this research. But effectively, what they've done, they took lots and lots of team across the company, and they tried to find some correlations on what makes this team the HPT team, effectively high performing one. And what surprised them, they couldn't find it that easily because they were trying to think, right, it's only the, let's say, the teams that work in one location that are high performing, and this hypothesis is proven wrong, or it's only the teams of the same age bracket, whatever. So they tested a bunch of obvious hypotheses, and none of them seemed to give them a conclusive results. And then they went deeper and they recorded team meetings, how the meetings go, and which gave them one of the definitive factors. And the factor was how equally distributed time, speaking time, between the people in the room. So do they have like one or two people who are speaking all the time, or do they have people who are quietly, basically who are just quiet for the whole direction of the meeting? And the more evenly it was distributed, the better in general it was for the team, which I found this insight very, very interesting. And if you think about it, it's very valuable because it means that the team is paying attention to different communication styles, and it's about managing yourself as well as trying to help others in the authentic way. So that's one thing. And another thing which is very close to my heart is this imperfection and authenticity. I'm never trying to be perfect or like, you know, corporate serious with my teams. I'm always trying to encourage this more of the relaxed style than it's possible. I'm making mistakes, right? I'm highlighting my mistakes, trying to be vulnerable, trying to laugh about them together with my team. And it might be, sometimes it's big things, right? When I made the wrong decision and when I will say, look, guys, this was wrong, this is why. Sometimes it's small things, like I misspelled some word, or sometimes I'm still like, you know, if I'm thinking too hard, I might be talking and then suddenly I say something in some foreign language. And then like they all start laughing. And I think it's so important not to kind of create this vulnerability, because then it allows everyone to see you as a human being and to be more themselves as well.
Yeah, not just like a corporate robot. It's like we're actual people that make up this organization.
Exactly. We're human, we're perfect and also imperfect at the same time, right?
To kind of segue into our next question, could you share any strategies or tactics that you found effective in balancing your career growth with other aspects of your life, such as family or personal pursuits?
Probably one of my favorite questions, because I do have a podcast related to that. Yeah. So it's kind of an indie podcast. It's a small one. We only recorded 8 episodes so far, but it's called Rockin' Creeps and Careers. And it is about how the professionally active moms navigating effectively working environment and exactly trying to answer the question you're asking. I have created it because when I had a daughter a year and a half ago, I was kind of one of the things that helped me to even decide having a baby at this point of my career is the fact that I was surrounded with this amazing female who seemed to have it all. And I kind of believed it's possible. And when I wanted to talk to them and interview them to understand what do you do, what I can, basically what I can adapt. And there are some, I've heard some incredible stories, some shared practices and also some individual things. But I think some things that worked for my guests, and many of them work for me as well, it's around, so delegation is number one thing. In the product leadership roles, especially, you have to find the team you trust, empower your team to act in the best way. And that's just about it. In family, it's also important to delegate things. Delegate things you don't enjoy. And don't delegate things that brings you energy, right? So for me, it's kind of, I would never delegate the time, which is like an hour before sleep with my daughter, because this is the time I'm enjoying with her and stuff like this. But I'm delegating to the nanny going with Rosie to the clubs and like things like that, developmental classes, because for one reason or not, that's something I'm not that interested in. So it's kind of balancing this energy, finding the things that someone else best at, and finding the things that you yourself don't get this boost of energy, and absolutely dividing and conquering it with the other parts of your family and your overall village. I think the other bit is about realization that you cannot do it all. And kind of you always have to prioritize. So it's kind of right. I have those 20 fires in place. I can only do 3. So let's choose.
Yeah, choose wisely.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Choose wisely. Our bit, which seems to be a harder insight to get to, is thinking about yourself. Thinking about, like, you can do work. You can devote time to your family. But if at the same time your mental health and your physical capacity is at the low level, you won't do any of that well, right? And you'll probably only confuse things further. So it seems to be simple. It's very counterintuitive in the moment, because where you have like a work crisis, a family crisis, I think the key reaction is, I'll just do more of it, like the immediate reaction. Okay. And when it gets better, then you, I kind of what I think I'm still learning to do, but what is crucially important, it's actually this contraction of pulling yourself out, going for a walk, doing something that is for yourself only to get to your best mental and physical state to then progress with other things. And one very last thing, which is also about my organization, which helps me personally on the authenticity side, right? It's about, to me, it's important to parent out loud. So when I come, I'd be one of these people who can come to a meeting, and when it's, and if my daughter runs to me, I'll pick her up, and kind of the whole meeting will see her, she will say hello. And it's, again, we're all human, we all have families. So, and I feel it helps my team to kind of feel more relaxed about this stuff as well. And it kind of makes the whole environment, like, you know, less isolated, as in you have one personality and you have another personality, just more organic. So that's my detailed answer.
That's amazing. I think people definitely forget that you're allowed to be a person both in and out of work, and that they can merge. They don't have to be these total separate entities. It's probably healthier to have, be able to bring yourself into each. What are some trends or developments that you see shaping the future of product, particularly when it comes to the contributions of women?
Well, I think, I don't even know whether we should talk about AI or not, because goddammit, not, I think there is not a single article or the podcast or whatever it is coming without mentioning it, but it's kind of on the obvious side in terms of, I see it as the next industrial age almost. Mm-hmm. So some things are going to get automated, hence the human element of things related to emotions and navigation of emotional context is going to become even more relevant. And this is what, as we already discussed, this is what female and women are usually best at. Mm-hmm. So I feel in this sense, it's going to be mostly about how do we create this organic environment of kind of living in this new era of the product management, that some of the hard skills are going to probably get easier, and how do we navigate the flexibility of this. And the second, so one role of contribution of women, it's how to effectively maintain this human element and human touch. And again, I feel it's kind of, I always like to add this clause that it's not only about women. It's statistically speaking, mostly relevant to women, but I also don't want to discriminate against other people there. But anyway, so this is one of the things. And another thing, I think, around building the kind of understanding how the flexible new product management role might look like, and the flexible environment, what is this new next meta level of what we are going to do as a product people. But all in all, I'm very, very excited about what is coming. I have no doubt that it's going to change a lot. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt that for, in terms of the involvement and contribution of women, things are going to get only better. So I'm an endless optimist in this
very
sense.
Helpful. Me too. Yep. How do you approach decision-making and problem-solving within your role, and how does gender diversity influence the processes in your experience?
I think, so there is lots and lots of different tactics. It depends, right, on the magnitude of decision, or what is it? Is it like a problem related to the data, or is it problem a bit of more the soft skill conflict resolution side? But overall, I think it's very useful to encourage these different communication style and different opinions in the problem solving when you involve different people. I find it useful to kind of at the beginning of the, let's say they have a problem solving session or something like this, to discuss, it's almost to set some half joking rules of the game, mm-hmm. but that help us to go forward. As an example, we have sometimes in the team some people who are more kind of very opinionated, and they also tend to give a long monologues and things like that. And then we have mostly female, quieter people who are more on the softer side, and hence you need to ensure that we have this equal environment. So what I tend to introduce in these problem-solving sessions, it's a 4 minutes monologue rule. So effectively, each time anyone starts speaking, I will set the timer, and the timer will beep in 4 minutes, and no matter what they will say, they kind of got to finish it, and that ensures that we're not going to the rabbit holes. But it's also kind of, once we started using it, it became almost like an internal meme, yeah. as people treating it lightly and saying, hey, your 4 minutes is up like 100 years ago, or I'm going to time you. They just send in each other gifts with this. So it kind of took it from this contagious zone. I really like nonviolent communication rules. If for the podcast listeners, if you haven't, if you never came across the concept, I encourage you to look it up. There is a book and then brilliant masterclass on that as well. I think it's useful for any kind of problem solving, because no matter what you're solving, there is an emotion part of it, especially in conflict resolutions. And it's just a way of communicating, mm-hmm. which is not triggering the evolutionary response. So it's removing approximately 50% of the challenge. Of course, if it's more of the data-driven decision-making, of course, with like I like to look at basically being as objective as possible with data leading the way. And one, a couple of more things is, I think it's useful to know your personality type, mm-hmm. and know the personality type of people in the group. It yeah. might be like Myers-Briggs test, or it might be something else. Are you thinking of feeling person and stuff like this? And I think it helps to discuss those things in advance. Again, treating like knowing each other, limitations and differences. Other interesting test actually that is helpful with decision making and with communication styles I came across recently called CAI. I don't know, Rebecca, if you've seen this one.
No, but
yeah. Yeah, so that's my recent discovery, hence sharing. It basically measures your level of creativity versus order.
Oh,
and yeah, there is a scale which goes from about like 18 to about 140, wow. and in the bell shape. And the theory goes that in the team, to progress with decision-making and any kind of execution, you need to have people from both, kind of from the right-hand side and from the left-hand side. But it also, there is also an interesting observations about things like if people are further than 20 from each other on the scale, it's hard for them to understand each other. So they need like a third person, a translator between yeah. them. I myself is very, very hard, high on like, right side, so a creative skill. Mm-hmm. But now everyone in the team knows that because we're sharing Myers-Briggs and this test with each other as well. It again adds a bit of humor.
Yeah.
And when someone from this orderly skill doesn't understand me, they say, oh, it's just your 130 rating yeah. or whatever it is. So you need a translator in the room. So I think that's it. Knowing your personality, trusting data, applying empathy, and knowing what are the reversible decisions too.
Oh, I love Myers-Briggs. What's your type?
Oh, that's actually, I think I'm ENTP, okay. if I'm remembering letters right. But, you know, and some of them, I'm in between. For example, thinking and feeling, they say you're supposed to be consistent, mm-hmm. right? Like, at least the theory goes. In some of them, I am like tipping over yeah. one or another. So thinking and feeling is one of those.
I know. Quite a few people who their Myers-Briggs has changed after they've gone to therapy and they've
oh, wow.
processed their emotions and they kind of became their more authentic selves. And when they retook the test, their answers changed. So I always thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. That's a cool insight. I didn't know that. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Could you share any memorable success stories or moments from a career that highlights the impact of women's leadership in the product space?
So, you know, the very first example that came to my mind is perhaps a story about my mentor. And so I absolutely love this story because I found a mentor quite randomly when I was in, so I've just became a CPO at Holland & Barrett. As I already said, I was the first CPO on the role. So it was like, you know, I had to resolve lots of things. I had to think a lot. There was lots of moments where kind of I had to validate my thinking on things. And right at this point, a brilliant female product leader, her name is Anna Buldakova, and she's actually now a CEO of the startup focused on mentorship. No. So, but at this point, she didn't have a startup yet, and she just had this news channel or whatever it is, in which she was basically saying something like, "Hey guys, lots of people in this channel, why don't we pair the people? Basically, tell me if you want to be a mentee, tell me if you want to be a mentor, and then we'll just find the random pairs in these groups." And I think there was like a primitive bot. Someone wrote for her, like doing work on this. But anyway, so I've entered this group. I wrote a message, and just like from the random message, I found an amazing mentor who was a product director at Amazon at the time. And we just had so many connection points. We were from a similar cultural background. So we started, she lived in Berlin, and we started to meet once a week. And it was kind of, it was a therapy session, but also like I've learned tons and tons from her, and I was able to validate my thinking so many times. And it was so pivotal for me and so important in this kind of a period of my career growth. And that's probably the first friend ever I made like this. It was distant, random relationship, because currently we are at the similar roles in transformation in different companies. We are now close friends, but also close support to each other. Yes, so if Maria is listening to this, huge and warm welcome, and thank you for helping me through these years. But it was like, you know, what it the reason I wanted to talk about this example, I find it very inspiring as someone from a female product leadership community just wanted to help someone else, elevating the experience completely pro bono. And I think this is one of the key drivers, like the volunteers like this and behaviors like this, one of the key drivers why I see a female leadership community being increasingly successful. We got to stick together, girls, and we got to help each other. And yeah, that's just one of those things.
Aww, that's a lovely shout out to her. What are some initiatives or organizations you're involved in that aim to support and empower women in product management?
Well, I think the biggest thing that comes to mind is the podcast I am doing. It's not, hands up, it's not specifically about the product management, albeit for obvious reasons, quite often we're discussing product there because product leaders are coming to the podcast. But it is about women in leadership. It is about being not afraid to have it all. And to me, it is very close to my heart for a couple of reasons. One, I just loved having this opportunity to express my admiration for those brilliant women who came to podcast, where like various product leaders who have 4 kids, who gave birth to a baby and then had the very next day returned to work. Such an who went through the whole fundraising this while breastfeeding the baby. So like the amount of incredible stories that I felt I were able to give a bit more visibility for this is very heartwarming for me. But I also have a hope that it gave other ladies out there who perhaps in the same position I was a couple of years ago, thinking, can I really do that? Can I really do both things? Or he perhaps have a family and worried about returning back the career. I hope it gave this inspiration. I'm also trying to do other small bits and bobs such as mentorship, but I feel this one is now the most emotional one for me.
A lot of outreach, a lot of different people you can touch that way.
Yeah, and I feel like it's as we discussed at the beginning, right, this is, there is a big unsolved problem related to that. So, and I feel if we get in a bit close, if we will get a bit closer to solving this, to solving how mat leave impacts their career, it might be, it might be very, very impactful for like parity between genders overall.
Well, my last question is, how do you see the role of women evolving in the product management field? And what steps do you think individuals or organizations can take to foster greater gender equality?
I have one formulated answer there. But before we get to this, I just want to probably reiterate for a couple of bits and bobs we discussed before. So I feel as the product management industry is changing as we're embracing more and more different communication styles. And it's becoming more about like kind of managing this flexibility and human soft skills, emotions, and empathy. I see a growing role of women there. But in terms of how organizations can influence, can basically influence this inequality and the gap, my biggest answer would be, again, around the maternity leave equality and things like that. And I think, so that goes both ways, an interesting thing, because effectively sometimes you have a man, you have effectively a parent who wants to take a paternity leave, but it is socially unacceptable. Yep. And that means effectively we are not creating this equal environment. And that means we're still back to this checked situation where you have a parallel gap. And I feel that the very best way to resolve it would be to move in this direction where parental leave from both sides becomes more and more of the acceptable norm, and it becomes more and more encouraged rather than looked upon. So both parents can take it in a way that works for them. They can be flexible and effectively when we have this. I think it's better for kids because they have an exposure to two parents, but I think it's better for genders as a whole because they, because effectively then you equal the opportunity completely, right? You don't have this gap here for female. It is a bit of an idealistic view. I get it. But as my math degree says, like I see it as one of the core, I see it as one of the core things and core contributing factors. There is, of course, much more to it, but I'm sure you'll have more podcast episodes to talk about other aspects of this as well.
Well, I don't have any other questions. Was there anything else that you'd like to bring up while I have you on the show?
Only one thing for all the brilliant female listening out there. I'm wishing you the best success in your career. Go and do it. Do not listen to the skeptics. Do not let glass ceilings and things to hold you back. If you feel that you have an authentic desire to do something, just do it. And we are there as a female community. We are there and
amazing support. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I've got wonderful insight. We will chat some more after, but thank you, audience, for listening with us, and we will see you on the next episode of Innovate Her.
Thank you for listening.